From walking barefoot in the snow to hiking for miles for a view, it feels good to connect with our simpler side. Simplifying your wellness with Kachava's all-in-one nutrition shake feels good too. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st when they go to Kachava, KACHAVA.com, and use code NEWS. Whether you're walking barefoot in the snow, escaping for a walk on your lunch break, or trekking halfway across the world for a lush view, it feels good when we unplug and connect to our simpler side. If only our everyday nutrition were that simple. It's time to simplify your wellness routine with Kachava. Getting the nutrition we need from that graveyard of supplements in our cupboards is often overcomplicated. Just 2 scoops of Kachava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, keep it simple with just 2 scoops that have the highest quality ingredients. Simplify your nutrition at kachava.com and use code NEWS. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st. That's Kachava, KACHAVA.com, code NEWS.
Welcome to the 333rd episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are a review of Patrick's weekend predictions, a quick review of recent bowl action, and a preview of the college football playoff quarterfinals, a look back at week 17 in the NFL, and our weekly look back at basketball action starting in the NBA, and then a quick recap of the past week's action in college basketball. Let's jump right in with a look at Patrick's weekend predictions. Starting in college football, Patrick went 3-1 with his weekend predictions. In the NFL, Patrick went 2-2. And in the NBA, Patrick went 3-1. Bringing his weekly total to an 8-4 record and his overall record to 1,433-909. That is a 61.2% winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, obviously this week I can finally, well, not finally, but I can say confidently that it was a good overall week of predictions. In college football, all these games were bowl games. Interestingly, I think I wouldn't say I was the most confident in Missouri winning out of any of these teams, but probably towards the more confident wins that I thought would happen on Saturday. So that was actually a surprising loss for number 19 Virginia to beat Missouri 13-7, mostly because Virginia's run defense this year has just not been very good, and Missouri's kind of only offense this season has been Ahmad Hardy, who is their running back. So kind of expected them to be able to just work off of that. And, you know, even because it's a bowl game, even air it out a little bit, working more off of play actions through that strong run game, but they got nothing going after their opening drive. So Virginia just dominated that one, frankly, which I got wrong. Then you had number 21 Houston. They went down 14-0 to LSU, but came back. Crazy back and forth game, ended up winning 38-35. Number 25 North Texas beat San Diego State 49-47. Which was another crazy back-and-forth game. And then, of course, as they're calling it, the People's National Championship, number 12 BYU beat number 22 Georgia Tech 25-21 in the Pop-Tarts Bowl, which was another win for me. BYU coming back from 11 down in that game to claim the victory. Very satisfied with those predictions, obviously going 3-1, only getting that Virginia-Missouri game wrong. Obviously, this week the predictions will be well, actually, they won't be the playoff games because they will have already happened. But I guess, well, one game will have already happened. It'll be 3 playoff games and whatever random other bowl game I choose. But next week, it'll be back to pretty much only playoff games because Thursday and Friday, I think, next week are the only games that there are next week. So that'll be back to playoff games. But for now, it's the NFL who's on the precipice of the playoffs themselves. The Eagles beat the Bills 13-12. That was a loss for me. And the Ravens beat the Packers 41-24. That was another loss. I had trouble picking that game because, you know, by the time I had picked it, we didn't even know who was playing quarterback for either team. I went on the bet that I know for a fact, or we knew for a fact that it was going to be Tyler Huntley for the Ravens, but didn't know if Jordan Love could play. I thought he wouldn't, but based on how Malik Willis played against Chicago, I was like, eh, just pick the Packers anyway because they're at home and Willis looked fine. But in the end, neither team relied on their quarterback, and the issue is Josh Jacobs was completely stuffed by the Ravens' defense, but Derrick Henry had probably his best game of the season. So, in the end, the Ravens easily just get away from the Packers, pull away with that running game that they really haven't had all year long, frankly. Hasn't been one of Derrick Henry's best years. But Ravens got it when they needed it the most, and we'll talk about why that game matters later, but those are the two I got wrong. Obviously, the Bills also went for two, and that's why they lost their game, so not too upset with that. Then you have the Texans, who jumped out to a 14-0 lead, and then only won 20-16, but they did win, so I got that right. And then the 49ers beat the Bears 42-38 in probably one of the best games of the year in terms of actually just entertainment, not even only offensive play. It was actually just a good game, mostly good offense succeeding and executing against okay defense rather than, you know, just terrible defense giving up points or anything like that. But in the NBA, I went 3-1, all these Christmas Day predictions. The Spurs beating the Thunder was the only game I got wrong, which is ironic because I literally picked the Thunder with the premise in my head of there's just no way the Thunder lose three games in a row to the same team, right? And I put no further thought into it, and, well, they did. The Spurs really have the Thunder's number. The Thunder have 5 losses this year, and 3 of them are to the Spurs. So that should tell you all you need to know about that matchup, and it's really interesting because it will probably be the Western Conference Finals. Interesting to look at later in the season. We'll see if that holds. But for now, also, the other games, the Knicks beat the Cavs 126-124. Probably it would have been the best game of the day, but I mean, maybe people on the East Coast were definitely asleep for Nuggets Timberwolves, but that was the game that ended up being the best. The Timberwolves losing that one in overtime, 142-138. Again, got both of those right, and then also got right that the Rockets beat the Lakers 119-96. That was the game that wasn't supposed to be competitive, and it wasn't, along with the Warriors and Mavs, which I don't even think anybody watched. So those games were the not close ones were predictably not close. But overall, very happy with how I predicted all of the games.
All right, that wraps up our look at Patrick's weekend predictions for this week, his predictions for next week, as he mentioned, and as always, will be posted on our social media handles on Thursday. Let's now jump over to last week's football action, starting with bowl game action in college football.
Starting off with the Hawaii Bowl on Christmas Eve, Hawaii beat Cal 35-31, 22 points in the fourth quarter for the Rainbow Warriors to take that one. Cal had a decent season considering they fired their coach midway through. And obviously JKS is the quarterback of the future for them. So they have that in place. But the question is, can they surround him with a little more talent in the transfer portal? I think their fans want them to go after pretty much anybody and everybody, to bolster the receiver room. I don't know if they're going to get anybody and everybody, but they're going to get somebody. And you know, if they can help him out a little bit, they could be a good team in the ACC next year. I mean, this is a team that, you know, it's hard to go, I mean, obviously this goes both ways, but it's hard to go across the country and play a team this good on whatever Saturday night in the middle of the season when you're traveling cross-country for all those teams. And obviously, like I said, same thing goes for them on the road. They went 3-4 on the road this year anyway. But it's worth noting that that could be an interesting factor next year, both with the travel and also just with the fact that they might have the best quarterback in the conference heading into the season, depending on transfer portal news, and also your opinion on Darian Mensa, pretty much. But in another bowl game, Northwestern beat Central Michigan. I think this was called the Sports Bowl, which is really funny. But this one, not close. Northwestern just kind of came out and dominated Central Michigan. They were expected to, though. I think they were one of maybe 2 or 3 double-digit favorites in the entire bowl season, so not too surprising that this happened, but it did happen. Northwestern ending the season with a winning record. And then also hiring Chip Kelly as their offensive coordinator is what the report is this morning. So that's a very big difference going from Zach Lujan to Chip Kelly, mostly because Zach Lujan just wasn't a good offensive coordinator at all. And Chip Kelly obviously has a much better reputation than a guy that you think would end up at Northwestern after a 7-6 season. But interesting also because Northwestern needs a quarterback for next year. So maybe that'll help recruit in the transfer portal to get an upgrade this year. But speaking of a team that doesn't need a quarterback in the Big Ten, Minnesota has their guy, Drake Lindsey. Pretty good young quarterback. He led them to the victory over New Mexico. That gives Minnesota another 8-win season. Feels like they get there every year somehow, some way. But New Mexico put up a good fight in this game, obviously. Went to overtime. So New Mexico putting up a good fight. Very low scoring, very boring game, frankly. But I think that's what you expect between these two teams, especially. And then overtime was just New Mexico kicks a field goal. Minnesota got a touchdown on a 3rd-and-8 throw to the end zone on their first series of downs, even. So pretty quick end to what was kind of a, you know, slow grind of an overtime game. Then UTSA dominated FIU 57-20. This game was tied 14-14 at the end of the first quarter, and then the Roadrunners just ran away with it. You know, this game, actually, FIU started up 14-0, which is even crazier. So obviously, if you want to talk in basketball terms, UTSA ended the game on a 57-6 run, ended the first half on a 31-0 run, and just really this game was not close after UTSA stopped giving up a punt return touchdown and turning the ball over. Then, the Pop Darts Bowl, I talked about BYU scoring 15 unanswered in the fourth quarter after being down 21-10 at the half to get the win. BYU, a team of comebacks all year long. Sad we didn't get to see them in the playoffs. But, you know, it happens. I think, obviously, when you talk about the group of five teams, this team would have been better, but that's why they were ranked number 12, even though, obviously, the 12-team playoff doesn't put the number 12 team in the playoff. So, BYU, still a very, 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 very good season, only losing to a team that still has only lost one game this year, and will be playing in the quarterfinals on Thursday, on Thursday, which we will talk about in a second. But, you know, BYU only 2 losses to Texas Tech on the season. Nothing to be ashamed of there. Kalani Sitake long-term is locked up as well. So that's a good thing for them. We talked about the Virginia game. Obviously, again, Missouri scoring on the opening drive. Did not score for the rest of the game. A good job by Virginia's defense to lock that one up and get the victory. Houston, as I said, back and forth with LSU in that 38-35 battle. Houston with really, I mean, a season that flew under the radar for, I think, most people, but no, I mean, I don't think they ever got into the top 20. I think they might end the season 19th or 18th, but I don't think they were ever in the top 20 the entire season just because they started off 6-0 against a really easy schedule. They kind of barely got ranked when they were either 6-0 or 7-0, just because they kind of needed to be. There wasn't really a team to fill the void kind of at the bottom of the rankings. That's when they poked their head in, and then they immediately lost to West Virginia. So they had 2 weird losses this year, which kind of knocked them in and out of the polls, even though they've been on a pace for 9 wins or more pretty much the entire season. And of course, ending 10-3 is some very, very good progress for the Cougars, who were picked to finish towards the bottom of the conference, if not at the bottom, and definitely not supposed to be anywhere near the title race, which they were. Then you have North Texas, who won Drew Mestemaker's final game. He is now in the transfer portal, along with their starting running back, and obviously their coach left as well. So it'll be interesting, though, because I think one of the main points that people have said is Mestemaker could just go to Oklahoma State with his coach, and that would be a pretty big deal for Oklahoma State because they would be pretty competitive immediately if they could surround him and that running back with some other power conference talent and retain some guys maybe from last year, although I don't know if they want anybody from this year's team with how bad they were. But this is obviously a top 25 team, and a lot of it comes from Mestemaker being one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and he's young and can get even better. So you bring over his head coach and his offensive coordinator. Maybe if you bring him too, you might have a pretty good team in the Big 12, at least a team that should probably make a bowl game next year. But that's all speculative because who knows if he even transfers there. Obviously, there will be other teams, frankly, much better teams that will want him to lead their program as well, the way that he played this season. Frankly, wouldn't be surprised if Oregon came calling now that Austin Novosad is in the portal and Dante Moore was obviously leaving for the NFL in almost every universe, I think. But moving on from that, East Carolina beat Pitt 23-17. This game was really, really strange, a really close back-and-forth game, definitely dominated by the defenses on both ends. But when they needed to score, both teams were able to get going. There was a East Carolina touchdown taken off the board that immediately turned into a Pitt scoop and score. And then East Carolina scored on their first play from scrimmage on the next drive. Like, there were some very interesting swings in this game. But in the end, I think the team that thoroughly outplayed the other team did end up winning. So, even though I picked it wrong, not necessarily dissatisfied with the result. Then you had Penn State and Clemson, and of course the bowl that everybody made fun of as a should have been playoff bowl game that turned into the Pinstripe Bowl. Penn State won 22-10, 16 points in the fourth quarter for them, and they finished the season above 500. Then Army beat UConn 41-16, just ran all over them as everybody expected. Good season for UConn, though, still worth noting. And then Fresno State got to 9-4 with an 18-3 win against Miami of Ohio. Field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal. I could say field goal like a billion times, and it would be accurate for that game. But I also want to mention, it's the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl. Who didn't have fun watching that one?
All right. Well, that's true. And who didn't have fun watching the Pop-Tarts Bowl, as you mentioned, the People's Championship? Yeah, I was actually trying to go back and find whether we both had Penn State and Clemson in the playoff as a prediction. I didn't have time to do that, but why don't we just instead...
I know I did.
I'm going to go back and look while you are doing a preview of the teams who are actually still in the college football playoff as we get to quarterfinal action here, which starts on New Year's Eve.
Well, I'll start with one team that I definitely know I had in, Ohio State against Miami. Ohio State, look, I think this is the game we're not going to spend that much time on because, frankly, Miami's defense won them game their first game to get to the Cotton Bowl. Ohio State's defense is better than Miami's defense. And that's the thing that Miami needs to rely on for them to win the game. And no offense to Miami's offense. I know that they have put up points this year, but I don't see it. I just don't see how they score enough to win this game. I think there's a reason why Ohio State's favored by 9.5. I do think this is a 10-14 point game, if not more. And the only reason I think it would be 10-14 is if it ends up as like a 21-7 or 24-7 type game, which I guess that's 17 points, not 10 or 14, but you get my point. It's got to be low scoring. It's got to be 24-10 or something like that if this game's even going to stay within a two possession margin. I think if anything, this could turn, if Ohio State's able to figure things out early against Miami's defense, I think this game is maybe like a 35-14, 35-17 type game. I don't think this game's going to be particularly close. I think Ohio State wins it pretty easily. Oregon, Texas Tech. Now this game, this is easily my favorite matchup that I think we're going to get throughout the entire playoffs because I don't really care about the Ole Miss Georgia rematch. We've already seen this before. But Texas Tech, this is a team that obviously only has one loss this season. The Big 12 has its reputation on the line in some people's minds. I don't think that's true, but there are some people who think that. And I think it's worth noting that that is, you know, what a lot of people are thinking about when they see this matchup. I do think that Texas Tech is going to play really well in this game. And I also think Oregon's going to play really well in this game because they have a chip on their shoulder from last year. Interestingly enough, if you're looking at the Bowl Mania picks, this is not indicative of the real public because I bet the betting public is way different than this. But Oregon, -130 in this game. Texas Tech +110, and yet Oregon only has 28% of people on Bowl Mania picking. So if you want some value picks at the end of this and you've been picking Bowl Mania, according to Vegas, Oregon would be a very, very, very good team to pick and put and try to get points off of because apparently a lot of people think Texas Tech is winning this game. I've gone back and forth on this literally since the playoff bracket was announced. I think we talked about it on the first podcast that I didn't really know who was going to win this game. And frankly, I might have said something then that I won't say now. But I kept saying, you know, in terms of the larger scheme of this whole bracket, I think one of Ohio State or Georgia was going to advance from that bottom half. And we've talked about this since the start of it. I think that was pretty obvious. But then I kind of said, I don't know if Indiana's beating either Oregon or Texas Tech, but I also don't know who they're playing out of the two. I think Oregon has the motivation edge, and I think that even though I don't know how many Oregon fans are going all the way down to Miami, I still think this is an Oregon game that they can win. I do think that defense-wise, you know, Texas Tech hasn't played an offense this caliber anywhere near it this entire season, and they've had a great defense, but again, I just don't think they've played a team that's this good. And I also think that Oregon's defense is good enough that, you know, this probably ends up as like a 27-24 game that Oregon wins. I just think Dante Moore is too good. He's been really, really good recently, too. I think he's even gotten better as the season has gone on. So I have Oregon in this game. Then in the Indiana-Alabama game, I think if you switch the names, this is not a 7-point line. This is probably a 14-point line. I think even if you put them on film and switch the jerseys, you're probably looking at that Indiana team and you're saying they have no chance to lose this game against Alabama. But because it's Alabama, this game is supposed to be close. Alabama's not winning this game. They're not. I think that it will be close, but Indiana has to do exactly what Oklahoma did last week if Alabama's going to win this game. They have to turn the ball over at a ridiculous rate, drop snaps on punts, let Alabama just run down the field, get stupid penalties on unnecessary roughnesses. They have to do so many things wrong to lose this game. Indiana has the better defense. They have the better quarterback. They have the better receiver room. They have the better line. They have the better defensive line. There's not a position that I'd give Alabama an advantage in this matchup, even though I think overall it's probably going to be pretty close. But whether you want to break it down offense, defense, special teams, within units, boiling it down to the secondaries and the lines and linebackers, there just isn't a place where I think Alabama has an advantage to really go to. I mean, we saw this Indiana team play against Ohio State and hold them to 10 points, and I don't think anybody thinks Alabama's offense is as good as Ohio State's is. So if we're saying that Ohio State only scored 10 against Indiana on a neutral field with a Big Ten championship on the line, how is Alabama going to manage any better than that with a clearly worse offense and also a worse defense, which we've seen all year long? So that's my opinion on that game. I do think Indiana wins, and I do think it is still somehow close, but mostly just because I think Indiana has the rust factor that we saw last year with Ohio State and Oregon, where Oregon came out really, 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 really flat in that game. But I just don't think – I think if you're looking at one team in the country that wouldn't come out flat in a game, it's probably Indiana. And I think this is a good situation for them, even though obviously the rest isn't great. But Omar Cooper hasn't been healthy pretty much the entire back half of the season. He didn't even play in the Big Ten championship game. And now he's going to be, in all likelihood, a lot healthier than he's been. At least he's going to be playing in this game, or obviously what the reports are saying. So I believe in Indiana for sure. I mean, this is the Heisman. This is the best defense. This is the best secondary in the country, in my opinion. It's the best team in the country, and I don't think that Alabama has been anywhere near that conversation at any point this year. So I think that's a pretty clear-cut one for me. And I think, frankly, I said that this Indiana game I'm very confident in. I'm actually more confident in Georgia. There's just no way. I know that Ole Miss has played a lot better, especially on the defensive end. They've gotten a lot more pressure on opposing quarterbacks since they played Georgia. But also since playing Georgia, they lost their coach. They lost half their staff. Half of these guys now, they don't even have a foot out of the door. They have like a foot and a half out of the door because the portal's going to open like the day after this game. These guys are not paying attention to this game. I just have to say, they're just not. So I know the players will be ready to play, but the coaches, there's no way that they've game planned enough for Georgia really to win this game. And I also think, no offense to Tulane, but I think Georgia's been prepping for Ole Miss for a month. Because they knew that Ole Miss wasn't going to lose that game to Tulane. And frankly, if Tulane somehow pulled off the upset, Georgia would have been happy to study film on Tulane for 4 days and go out and play this game. So they're fine. They also already beat Ole Miss. And I know, like I said, Ole Miss has played better since they played Georgia. But Georgia has also gotten better. And in my opinion, Georgia has had more improvement since that game than Ole Miss has had. Ole Miss really has just generated more pressure on the quarterback and played the same on offense, maybe slightly better. Georgia has just played better on defense, better on offense. They've just continually gotten better as the year has gone on and on and on and on and on. And I think Georgia has gotten better and better and better. And I think this game, frankly, probably isn't as close. I mean, this could be the biggest blowout of the round. Frankly, it's between this game and Ohio State for who will be the biggest blowout. This one might have more points, though, which might lead to a larger margin, even if it's a closer-ish game, if that makes sense. But I think this could be like a 38-24, 38-21 type win for Georgia. Don't think Ole Miss's defensive improvements have done enough to give them an edge in this game at all.
So I think you and I see the same things, barring a game with the sloppy turnovers by the favorite. It's going to be all chalk except for Oregon beating Texas Tech, which then would set up a very interesting Final Four of three Big Ten teams and Georgia. Quite compelling if that happens. For the record,
I would argue that is exactly how the last 3 years have gone, though. This is probably about right that it should be only Big Ten teams in Georgia. That's kind of been who's been dominating the last few years. So
yes, and for the record, I did have a Penn State-Clemson matchup, actually, in this round with Penn State as a 4 seed and Clemson as a 5. I'm willing to admit my failures. I did have 4 of the final 8 predicted correctly at the beginning of the season.
Patrick, correct me if I'm wrong, I had Clemson in the national championship game.
You did, yep. And you only had 3 of the final 8 teams, which just shows you how crazy this year has been. Frankly, you only had 3 of 12. This year was extremely unpredictable, but I think these quarterfinals are going to be very entertaining. Let's turn our attention to Week 17 in the NFL.
Starting in the NFC North, the Vikings beat the Lions 23-10. Just worth noting, they are 4-0 since J.J. McCarthy came back. Of course, he didn't play this game, but I could have played this game at quarterback, and the Vikings still would have won. Max Brosmer had, I think 7 net passing yards when you factor in the sacks, and they still won the game. That's because the Lions turned the ball over 6 times. If you had Jared Goff as your fantasy quarterback that helped bring you to the fantasy championship promised land, you probably lost. I was one of those people. Also, if you had Jameson Williams, you also probably lost. But anyway, moving on, or if you had Jahmyr Gibbs, which I was all 3 of those people. But moving on, Vikings getting that win, looking good heading into the offseason. And the Lions, of course, that eliminated them from playoff contention, which meant that all of the NFC teams were set in stone except for the NFC South winner, where no team wants to win the division, which we'll get to in a second. But the Chiefs, lost to the Broncos 20-13. Broncos continuing their quest for the 1 seed. Not going to say too much about that game, but just worth noting, obviously, because they're a playoff team. The Texans went on the road, beat the Chargers 20-16. Obviously, this is a playoff matchup last year that I believe the Chargers ended up winning. But this year, 2-11-5 teams very well could see them again playing each other in the playoffs. Frankly, could be the 4-5 matchup. I think it won't be because the Texans are probably not going to win their division, but it's possible. It is a matchup that could happen. I don't think it will, because that's, of course, the Jaguars' division to lose, and they are 12-4, playing some great football. 23-17, they beat the Colts this weekend. The Colts, of course, out of playoff contention as well, now that they are at 8-8. But obviously, everything's set up for a very, very interesting week next week, and that division is certainly one of the ones that everybody will be looking out for. But for the Jaguars, they have the Titans, and no offense to the Titans, but if a team has a divisional championship on the line and a potential chance at a 1 seed, I don't think they're losing to the Cam Ward Titans at the end of the season. So it should be an easy one for the Jaguars, but, you know, if they somehow manage to lose that game, then the Texans could beat the Colts, and then I actually don't know what the tiebreaker is. Maybe the Jaguars have already clinched that division. Not even quite sure. No, they haven't, but both of those teams obviously still playoff teams, which is the most important thing. Then you have the Ravens, who beat the Packers 41-24. Of course, the Packers, had the Lions won, would have been a really interesting final week for them because they would have been 9-6-1. The Lions would have been 9-7. And then the Packers would have gone to Minnesota to take on the Vikings. And if they had lost that game, that would be the end of their playoff chances if the Lions were able to get a win over the Bears, although I don't think the way they're playing, I don't think they're going to do that either. But really interesting game there, obviously, in the NFC North, although the Packers ended up clinching via the Lions' loss the day before that, or Thursday. This game was on Saturday, but 2 days before that anyway. Then you have the Eagles. They beat the Bills 13-12. This allowed the Patriots to clinch the AFC East. Good for the Patriots, of course. Get to them in a second. The Eagles, 11-5 on the season. Still chipping away at playing for better seeding. Obviously, that's kind of the name of the game. At this point in the year, that division has been long clinched for Philly because the Cowboys are the next best team at 7-8-1, which isn't very good. But it's an interesting thing because the Eagles could play the Rams again in the playoffs like they did last year. They could end up playing the Packers. They could end up playing they can't end up playing the NFC South winner. So could end up playing the 49ers, though, depending on the seeding. So, again, it's an interesting final week of the season, but really only for seeding purposes. And then four teams that are refusing to actually win their division. One of those teams, the Pittsburgh Steelers. All they had to do, and this is why I say you never know with the Jaguars this week, all the Steelers had to do to win their division was beat the 3-12 Browns on the road, and they couldn't do that. They gave up 10 points in the first quarter. And, you know, interesting game because Myles Garrett actually called them out after the game and said that he felt that their game plan was more about not letting him get the sack record than it was about winning the game, which it's an interesting argument. I don't think that's true. I think the game plan was more so the fact that DK Metcalf wasn't on the field, and the Steelers wide receiver room outside of DK Metcalf has zero ability to get any separation, and that has been the case all season long. His main targets, Aaron Rodgers' main targets in this game, and it's been heavily talked about, 16 targets combined for Scotty Miller and Marquez Valdez-Scantling, two guys who were practice squad and not on a roster as of the beginning of the year, and on and off rosters in the case of MVS. Not saying that they're both bad, but they're not the guys you want to be targeting a combined 16 times with a playoff spot. Playoff spot in a division on the line. Regardless, 6 points is shameful, especially against the Browns. And the Steelers lose that game, which sets up, of course, the Ravens and the Steelers as a division-winning game. After all this, it feels like this always happens, and there is no reason the Ravens should still be in playoff contention, but here we are. Final week, it will be Ravens-Steelers to decide the division. Ravens favored in that game. I would pick the Ravens as of today, and I think I will stick with that when I do my predictions in 2 days. But it'll be an interesting game. And speaking of games where the teams don't want to win their divisions, the Dolphins beat the Buccaneers to get to 7-9. The Bucs are now at 7-9 on the season. The Dolphins won that game 20-17. Baker has thrown a pick in 4 straight games, and the Bucs have lost, I think, all 4 of those games, if not at least 3 of the 4. And interestingly enough, go all the way back to that Thursday night football game that people thought wouldn't really be consequential other than the fact that the Buccaneers were, still in a tight divisional race. The Buccaneers lost to the Falcons that they choked away on Thursday night football a few weeks ago might actually end up being the tiebreaker for this division, and we'll get to that in a second. That's because the Panthers lost again, this time to the Seahawks, 27-10 at home. Bryce Young had like 50 yards passing in this game, just a terrible, terrible game. For Carolina's offense, and no offense, but you see these two teams losing to the Dolphins and getting demolished by the Seahawks, and you say, why are they even in the playoffs? And then you might start thinking about the fact that maybe the 5 seed is the best seed to get in all of the NFC, because you don't have a bye week like the 1 seed will, so you don't have rust to knock off, but you're also not going to lose to the Panthers or the Buccaneers if you're a real team anyway. So currently, that would be the 49ers. Good position for them to be in. And it's also worth noting again, just neither of these teams want to win this division. And at this point, we're staring down a world where if the Buccaneers beat the Panthers, which they are favored to do at home, this would be a 3-way tie in the NFC South. And the Falcons will have won a share of the division if they can win against the Saints, which has become a tall task later in the season, a thing that both the Buccaneers and the Panthers couldn't do at the end of the year. But if the Saints lose that game to the Falcons, all these teams end up 8-9 if the Buccaneers win and the Falcons win. And then, as I said, the Buccaneers' loss to the Falcons 3 weeks ago will be the thing that actually loses them the division, because the Falcons, in a 3-way tiebreak, actually bring down the Buccaneers' record in that total round robin, and the Panthers would be the one to get the division. So the Panthers actually easily have the best odds to win this division, because they just either need a Falcons win or themselves to win, which frankly, one of those games is going to be pretty close and the Panthers are going to be the underdogs, and the other game is probably going to be pretty close and the Falcons are going to be the favorites. So overall, probably 2 50-50 shots where you only need one of them to happen. Meanwhile, the Buccaneers need both of those things to happen, and they have no one to blame but themselves, because all they needed to do was go on the road and beat Quinn Ewers to make this game a winner-take-all game, or not choke a 14-point lead 2 weeks ago. Or 3 weeks ago. But many, many avenues for the Buccaneers to be leading this division and winning this division, but they didn't. Then you have the Patriots still in the battle for the 1 seed. They go to 13-3 with a domination over the Jets. Also worth noting that Drake May's 5-touchdown game this week, while Matt Stafford kind of floundered against the Falcons, is maybe a game that might have won Drake May the MVP, frankly, which is pretty interesting to think about. Now that race looks a lot closer on paper than it did heading into the week. Also looks a lot closer because the Rams are going to be eliminated from 1 seed contention, and who knows how long Stafford will even play in that final game, whereas Drake May probably going to play out their entire game because they need the 1 seed. They would definitely prefer the playoffs to go through Foxborough than to have to go to Denver in a potential AFC championship game. So Patriots still rolling, though, looking really good. Finally, the most consequential game, it's not consequential at all for the playoff race, the Giants beat the Raiders, which means that once again, the Giants have an opportunity to get the number one pick. They don't want it. They want to win. They do not want that pick. The Raiders will probably get the number one pick because they lost this game 34-10 at home. Think easily deserved. They're by far the worst team in the league. And that means they probably will pick Fernando Mendoza to move on from Geno Smith. Who knows? Maybe it's Dante Moore. But it will be a quarterback. It better be a quarterback, because if they're going again with Geno Smith, then multiple people should be fired. But finally, the game of the week, the 49ers beating the Bears 42-38. That means the 49ers set up a winner-take-all game against the Seahawks, where the winner is the NFC 1 seed and the loser is either the 5 or the 6, depending on other results around the league, or maybe even the 7 seed, actually. I don't even know if the tiebreaker with the Rams comes into play here with the Niners. But definitely if the Seahawks lose, they're the 5 seed because they already have 13 wins. But an interesting week, setting up an even more interesting week 18, where we have two division winner games and two games, one game to directly decide the 1 seed, and then a bunch of other random seeding games and tiebreaker games and draft pick deciding games as well.
Yeah, definitely going to be an interesting final week in the NFL season. Let's turn our attention away from football and to basketball, starting, as always, with a quick recap of the last week in the NBA in the Eastern Conference.
Well, it's the Pistons who are still on top of things at 24-8, but they did give up 55 points to Kawhi Leonard two nights ago, which means that the Knicks are right behind them. They have won 3 in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10, and they're just one game back of the 1 seed. I think the Knicks heading into the season were the Eastern Conference favorites, and I think, frankly, they probably still are. But good week for the Knicks. Obviously, the comeback win against the Cavs on Christmas Day was a big win for them as well. Then you have the Celtics, who are at 19-12, 4.5 games back. The Raptors, who refuse to fade from this race, are 20-14 in the 4 seed currently. Right behind them are the Orlando Magic and the Miami Heat. The Heat have won 3 in a row. Magic just 4-6 in their last 10. But both of those teams at 18-15 tied for the 5th and the 6th seeds. And then tied for the 7th and the 8th seeds are the Sixers and the Cavs, who have taken very different routes to get here. But the Sixers have lost 3 in a row. Obviously, this is a team that their entire season will kind of hinge on what happens with injuries. And the Cavs are just a team that hasn't played very well, despite being relatively healthy, although they did just get Evan Mobley back from an injury. But both of them, 7 games back of the 1 seed. But again, only 3.5 games back of the Celtics at the 3 seed. So this Eastern Conference race is really tight. And obviously both of these teams, just 2 games back of the Raptors for the 4 seed and only 1/2 of a game behind the Magic and the Heat for the 5th seed. One win completely flips these standings from 8-5. So it's pretty important to realize that this race is very, very close, and it's still, well, it's about halfway through the season, at least past the third point, the 2/5 point. So it is getting into the middle of the season. However, still a lot of time to decide those playoff races. Then you have the Bulls, who are perennially stuck in the 9 or 10 seed spot. They are currently 9th at 15-17. They are 2 games back of that logjam that I was just talking about and 1 game ahead of the Atlanta Hawks, who have lost 7 games in a row and are now 15-19. Rumors swirling about them trading Trae Young. Speaking of rumors swirling around trading a player, Giannis Antetokounmpo came back for the Bucks this week. He won 2 games, including against the Bulls, he and they won 2 games. The Bucks now at 14-19, just a half game back of the Hawks for the final play-in spot that no one ever wants to grab in the East. Then you have the actual true bottom of the conference. The Hornets, 13 games back at 11-21. The Nets, 13 back at 10-20. And then the really, really bad teams, the Wizards at 7-24, and the Pacers at 6-27, who have lost 9 in a row. Then you have the Western Conference, where the Thunder leading things at 28-5, although they are 6-4 in their last 10 with, as I said, 3 of those losses coming to the San Antonio Spurs, who have now claimed their rightful place at 2nd in the Western Conference standings. At 23-9, they're 4.5 back of the Thunder. They're 1 game ahead of the Nuggets, who are the current 3 seed at 22-10. The Rockets are a game behind that at 20-10. The Lakers also 20-10, just a game behind the Nuggets. But both of those teams only a half game ahead of the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are 21-12 and in the 6 seed. And I have to say, for this top 6, this is probably the most accurate to how people think these teams will fare in the playoffs. That the standings have been all year long, maybe if you flipped the Nuggets and the Spurs, or maybe the Nuggets and the Rockets and then the Spurs. But this is pretty lined up. With what people are going to expect in the postseason. Also, maybe flip the Lakers and the Timberwolves the way the Lakers are playing right now. But worth noting that maybe lining up a little bit more with expectations as the Timberwolves now sit in the sixth seed. And I think we firmly have the top six in the West as the top six teams in the West. Then you have the Suns, who have actually been playing good enough basketball to kind of maybe change that narrative. They're at 19-13, 1.5 back of the Timberwolves after winning 4 in a row. They're the 7 seed. The Warriors at 17-16. They're also 6-4 in their last 10, but they are 2.5 back of the Suns in that 8 seed spot. Then you have the Grizzlies at 15-17. They're 6-4 in their last 10, not playing too terribly themselves. 1.5 back of the Warriors for the 8 seed. And then the Blazers are the last team in the playoffs at 14-19, although not too far behind them are the Utah Jazz at 12-19 and the Dallas Mavericks at 12-22, which is 16.5 games back of the Thunder, 2.5 back of the Blazers. And really interestingly, it's only 31 games into the season for the Clippers. They've won 4 in a row, and now all of a sudden they're 3 games back of the Blazers. This team has Kawhi Leonard back. They have James Harden. He's been playing well all season, kind of keeping everything afloat. If the Western Conference 10 seed is going to be that bad, I don't see a. I just don't see how the Clippers still miss the play-in all entirely. I mean, they just have too much talent on this team. They're definitely a flawed team. They're not going to make any noise in the playoffs, but no offense to the Grizzlies, the Blazers, and the Jazz, but the Clippers have higher standards than being below the Grizzlies, the Blazers, and the Jazz. I think that's the simplest way to put it. And the way that their season has gone, you know, this winning streak, I think, has proven that when they're healthy, when is a big thing. That may be an if, not even a when. But when they're healthy, they play decent enough basketball to at least be in the conversation. And 3 games isn't too much to make up over the course of the season as long as, you know, they actually stay healthy, although that's obviously no guarantee with the players that are on that roster. But for now, worth noting that the Clippers did that, and also that Kawhi had 55 points against the Pistons, which was the second 55-point game from a Clipper this year. Of course, the first, James Harden. Then you have the Kings, who are 8-24, and finally the Pelicans at 8-26 to wrap things up at the bottom of the Western Conference.
All right, well, to cap off this week's podcast, let's have a look back at college basketball action, which was very minimal given the holiday season, so only a few games to talk about here before teams really get into the meat of their conference schedules. A few interesting non-conference games will come up in the middle of the season, but in beginning of January, things will kick off in full force. Let's just take a look back at a few games from last week.
Well, conference play actually starts today. The ACC has a few interesting matchups. Louisville going all the way across the country to Cal, so that's kind of an interesting one. Also, there are plenty of other conferences that are playing, but Big Ten starting soon as well. But the Big East started pretty early. Villanova beat Seton Hall 64-56. The Big East does always start before the holiday break. And this was kind of the last good game, frankly, before, well, there were 4 days of no college basketball, which is why there's pretty much nothing here. But a good win for Villanova, a quad one win for Villanova, which is going to be hard to come by in the Big East since pretty much none of those teams are in the top 30 of the net. So you're going to have to go on the road and beat probably the fourth or fifth best team in the conference to get a quad one win. That's what Villanova did here. Frankly, maybe they're the second-best team in this conference at this point. I don't think there's anything to say that St. John's is better than them right now. But moving on, now we have after-the-break action. Northern Colorado went on the road, beat Colorado 86-81. I think this was their first win against Colorado since, like, 1930-something. But this Northern Colorado team, they pushed Texas Tech to the brink. They barely lost in that game. They obviously beat Colorado here in this game. Colorado started the season 8-0. This is a team that, I'm just going to say it now because probably not going to talk much about them in conference play. If they end up making the tournament by winning their conference tournament, this is a team that you should be picking in your March Madness brackets to beat a 5 seed or to beat a 4 seed, even if they're a 13 seed. This is a very, very dangerous team. They just score points in bunches. Even that game they lost to Texas Tech, I still think they scored like 90 or something. So Northern Colorado, team to watch out for. Then you have St. Mary's. They beat Loyola Marymount 78-73. Good road win for St. Mary's as well. Going on the road and beating a solid WCC team as well. Good conference play game. Then number 8, Houston beat Middle Tennessee 69-60. Close game. A little bit of a shocker. But I'm going to pick on two teams here who were in the top 10 and kind of came out of the break really, really slow. That Houston definitely won them, especially on the offensive end. That's a game that they should have won probably by 20 or 30. They only won by 9. And then Michigan State, giving up 97 points to Cornell. That is not how Tom Izzo wants to play basketball. Although, maybe you could argue it was their best offensive game of the year, so maybe that's something that they can hang their hats on. They kind of need to get better on offense if they're going to be a real title contender. So, an interesting game there that Michigan State had. And then final note, didn't even put it in here, but Michigan, another 40-point game, or another 40-point win, set the Big Ten record for most 40-point wins in a season. And also, in KenPom history since 1997, the third highest rated team of all time, which is very well worth noting as they move on to conference play this week. And other than USC, don't play a ranked team for another 2 or 3 weeks anyway. So might be a while, frankly, before Michigan or Arizona loses the way they've been playing. If they continue that, don't get injuries, and just stay consistent, they're not going to lose very many games this season. So an interesting season in college basketball, but you look at some flawed teams near the top and then some seemingly bulletproof teams at the very, very top of the sport as we head into conference play. But obviously, conference play is where all of this gets flipped upside down and turned around. I'm very much expecting Michigan, Arizona, Iowa State, all to at least lose a game before the end of January, if not before mid-February. And if they don't, then everybody's in trouble until those teams get to play each other.
Yeah, Michigan State trying to do what their in-state rival did and win a game scoring 100 points. They outscored Michigan, I think, by two, but Michigan won by over 40. Michigan State won by 17. Anyway, very interesting season in college basketball coming up with a lot of dominant teams at the top, like you've said. That wraps our look at college basketball for this week. It also wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, January 6th, where we'll once again talk about Patrick's weekend predictions, review quarterfinal college football playoff action and significant games from bowl seasons, and have a preview of the college football semis, review week 18 in the NFL and preview the NFL playoffs, and have our weekly review of the NBA and college basketball action. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursday, and his College Hoops Bracketology, which comes out every Monday. All of that content is on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND plus the number 24. Thank you for listening, and Happy New Year.